BetterHelp Online Therapy bought this 30-second ad to remind you, right now, wherever you are, to unclench your jaw, relax your shoulders, take a deep breath in and out. Feels better, right? That's 15 seconds of self-care. Imagine what you could do with more. Visit betterhelp.com/randompod for 10% off your first month of therapy. No pressure, just help. But for now, just relax.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here today. A nice end of June. Holy hell, July is almost around the corner. We got Canada Day. We got July 4th, Independence Day. We have the draft tomorrow. We have free agency July 1st. There's a lot going on, Tim.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in the real world. There's a lot going on in the hockey world. There's a lot going on in our world. But I think we'll start with the hockey stuff, John. What do you think?
Did you ever watch the Real World MTV?
Yeah, on TV.
Is that still a thing or no? Did they get rid of that?
No, but I think it's been replaced with those like Love Island and Love is Blind and all these dating Netflix shows that people watch.
I don't watch that crap. It's so skanky, all that stuff. It's just like, whatever happened to modesty? I don't know how we got to this topic, but it's like, hey, how are you? Let's go. To Pound Town, pretty much. But it's just, you know, there's no courtship anymore. It's crazy. But I used to watch Real World when I first moved to Chicago to play for the Freeze. That's when I was introduced to it because I didn't have MTV in Canada. Loved it. And then they started the challenges. I love the challenges. I absolutely love them. Up until a point where the people just got old and I felt like, you know, this is your sole job is to be on these challenges, like the Johnny Bananas guy. Like, that's all he did. He would just do challenges every 3 times a year, it seems like. I'm like, it just got, and he was like 40. I was like, Johnny, this isn't, I don't know. I just lost interest in it. But it was good. When it was going, it was good. Drop me a comment in the comments. Let me know who your favorite character. Because there was that one bad boy from Boston. What was his name? CT.
Gosh, I don't remember. There's a guy, Derek, I think. Oh, CT. I remember CT. Him and Derek. Yeah.
And CT married that really pretty girl who had like some, I think she had cancer or something. I don't know. It was a great show. I was fully invested. But anyways, back to hockey news. The Hall of Fame was announced. I wasn't indoctrinated. What's it called? Inducted? Indoctrinate. Oh my gosh, what are we doing here? But yeah, so four guys were inducted, and it was cool. They did the phone calls. Duncan Keith, my former teammate, Zdeno Chara, my former foe, Joel Thornton, my former teammate, and one of the greatest, in my opinion, to ever play the game. And it's strange that he's finally getting the tap now. Alexander McGillney, we're in the player category. The women's player category was Jennifer Botterill, legend in Canada. I've done some charity events with her. Great gal. Brianna Decker, same thing, international success. In the builder category, I have no clue who these people are. The note says no clue who these clowns are, Tim. I don't know why you would write that. Jack Parker and Danielle Savageau.
Yeah.
Thoughts, Tim? Thoughts on the inductees?
The only four I can really speak to are the NHL guys. Pump for Chara, not surprised there. I think Jumbo and Keith are very exciting too. I want to hear your take on them because you played with both those guys. And then McGillney, finally. I think the next one up in that kind of long running should have been inducted already, but hasn't yet, would be Keith Tkachuk. But I think it's really great for him. Very exciting. And tell me about Jumbo and Duncan Keith. Are you pumped for them?
Well, I think the obvious question is, do they deserve it? And that's what it always falls down on. Duncan Keith, does he deserve to be inducted into the National Hockey League Hall of Fame? Because it's a big deal to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, right? It's the creme de la creme. It's the upper echelon of players. And I think Dunks definitely does. Three Stanley Cups, international success, just basically driving the Chicago Blackhawks back end for a decade. You know, physical, top physical specimen on the ice, just does everything that you need to do to succeed. I did a spot on TSN yesterday because I played with Dunks and Jumbo. And they were asking me, what do they have, the intangibles of these two guys? And the one thing that just stands out is just the passion they had for the game. And it's completely different, Tim, kinds of passion. Because passions can be different. They can be good, they can be bad, they can be whatever. Duncan's passion was all-encompassing, where that's all he would think about. Every meal, everything he did, everywhere he went, his sole purpose was to be better at hockey. Much like you are with your LARPing. It's very just soul focus, laser focus. And we would go out to dinner and he would chew his food 50 times because he wanted to get every ounce of nutrition out of that food. We would go, you know, on the plane. He wouldn't have any beers. He would already be preparing for the next game. He put the compression pants on. He would do the air pants and the compression pants and all these things. And he would take vitamins. Everything was directed towards being better, to preparing for the next game. How can I be better? Watching video. It was insane. The guy was shredded, absolutely ripped, not an ounce of fat on him. And just, that's how he was. That's the only way he knew how to exist. And then you contrast that with Joe Thornton, equally passionate, not as laser focused on winning, but more a kid-like passion of just, I am enjoying this. I am, yes, going to work hard, but I'm going to have fun doing it. And he was a God's gift, the talent that he had. Like, I don't think you can do what he does without having a gift like that. And yes, he worked hard. Yes, he worked on his body. He was always in the gym. But just, I think, the awareness of hockey is a game. Hockey should be fun. And pairing that with his just ability to find people, it was a great combination, because usually when players are that talented and at that level, the Jagers, the Messiers, the Gretzkys, they're so just kind of tunnel vision, the Taves, the Crosbys, where they're not having fun for the most part, right? Their sole focus is to win, to the point where it's maddening for them. Whereas Jumbo, maybe people critique him on that. And that's a ding on his character. But I thought it was great where he was able to play the game, but also be aware of what was going on in real life. It's like, okay, hockey is, you know, important, but it's not be all end all. He was building relationships. He was having fun on the ice. He was doing it off the ice. Like he was living his life and just embracing everything that hockey gave to him. And I thought that was just such a great character trait that not a lot of players have. And so, I don't know, passionate about hockey, yes, but just a childlike giddiness that was so fun to be around. We'd win a game, he would be super high. We'd lose a game, he would still be super high because he knew we're playing in the NHL.
That's a great summary and something that could only be shared by someone who knows these guys as well as you do. And I've heard this said, and I really like the visual of it, is guys like Jumbo play with Christmas morning joy. Where they're just so excited, they're passionate. And like you said, they're just constantly reminded that, hey, we're playing a game for a living and let's enjoy it. And it's meant to be enjoyed. And both of those guys, obviously now literal Hall of Fame careers and such different ways of getting there and such different personalities, but they're both inducted now, or they both will be. And it's very, very exciting for them, and just great people too.
Well, yeah. And let's just talk about even Jumbo getting the call from Lanny McDonald and Ron Francis. It's probably one of the greatest, like, 2-minute call I've ever heard. Like, holy doodle, boys. Holy doodle. Like, he's so excited. Like, that's just who he is. We didn't get Dunks. Duncan is the guy who, once the season ends, you can't even get a hold of him. So I've been trying to get him on the show, and I've been going through my avenues, going through Chicago, going through his friends. Nobody can get a hold of Dunks. So I don't even know if he knows he's in the Hall of Fame just yet, but he's just like the man of mystery, whereas Jumbo's everywhere. Because he wants to be everywhere. He's just a fun guy to be around. All right, let's touch on Zdeno Chara a little bit. Obviously, Stanley Cup champion, international play, just played a million games. The guy was a juggernaut, physical specimen, just like Duncan Keith, but at a different level. He was physically imposing. And then to pair that physical dominance with the skill that he had, for being 6'9", 250 pounds, you don't typically see that size of player with the talent that he had, being on the power play, being able to make an outlet pass, being able to get a shot through, those types of things. Usually you get a Hal Gill. Usually you get a Corey Cross. Usually you get a John Scott. You don't typically get a guy who's that size, who is also that tough, who can also play that role of being a power play guy. Does he deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? Hell yeah, he does. Absolutely. I think he dominated the back end for what, the better part of a decade and a half, Tim?
Yeah, it was amazing. And obviously, I can just speak from the Bruins' point of view, is just what he did to build a culture and just lead from the front and the physical aspect of it. Like at the Bruins' training camps, he'd be the biggest guy by a lot and he would do the most pull-ups. Like that doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? Just a physical freak and just a great person, great character, hardest working guy on the team. He was just elite, like you said. And guys that size aren't supposed to have that skill. They're not supposed to be able to skate that way. And to do what he did for so long is really cool. So I'm very excited for him.
Yeah, I did an event with Chris Neal a couple of weeks back. And as we do, it was like me and him and a couple other guys just talking about players and fighting and this and that. And Mark Giordano was around. I'm just trying to drop names to make everybody jealous of me. But, you know, the topic of conversation got around to Zdeno Chara because he played with him in Ottawa. He obviously is good friends with him. And he asked me if I ever fought Big Z. And I said, no, I didn't fight him. Unfortunately, I asked him to go a couple times, but he always said no. And he said, yeah, I fought him a couple times and he's an absolute animal. But the one thing he said about Z was, I'm going to echo what you said. He's just a physical freak. Like he's climbing mountains. He's going on these marathon bike runs, but he's also able to just put up some serious points. The guy played almost 1,700 games in the NHL. 1,700 games, and he put up 700 points. Like that's pretty good clip for a guy of his size, considering when he came into the league with the Islanders, they tried to pigeonhole him into a fighter role. That's what they tried to do in New York. Then he goes to Ottawa and he just blossoms and he just takes off from there. And obviously he kind of puts a pin and bow on his career with the Boston Bruins, where he really, really came into his own and was the best player. Not the best player, probably top three defenseman every single year he played with the Boston Bruins. So good for him. And then to finish up the Hall of Fame inductees, it's Alexander McGillney. 16 years it took this guy to get into the Hall of Fame. I don't know why it's taken him so long to be voted into the Hall of Fame, because when you think of, you know, the 80s, when you think of talented players and guys who just were oozing skill and fun to watch, because the 80s was Broad Street Bullies. The 80s was, you know, Rock'em Sock'em Hockey. It was physical, clutching, grabbing, not a lot of free space to maneuver. It was can openers. And then you get a guy like Alexander McGillney, who is just a Picasso of a hockey player. Why did it take so long, Tim, in your opinion, for this guy not to be inducted into the Hall of Fame? Is it because he's Russian? Is that what you think?
I'm sure it didn't really help. He started in 89, played most of his career in the 90s. And I mean, I'm 34, so I was a little bit young. I don't remember watching him. I remember his name, like in the old video games and that sort of thing. I didn't really, you know, watch him like I watch some of the other names here, but I've seen his stats. I'm looking at him now and I've seen the case year over year of guys trying, of saying that he should be in the Hall of Fame by now. It's fact. He's got like more points and goals than some of the guys are already in there. So I don't know what happens behind closed doors or the politics of all that, but he's talented enough. He's had a good enough career, and to finally get that call when he thought at this point it's probably never coming must have been pretty special for him.
Yeah, I wonder why he gets in. And that's an honest question. Maybe it was a low class, or maybe there was pressure, but whatever the reason, the guy scored 76 goals in 77 games. Like that's in an era when goal scoring was down. That was in 92, 93. It was the dead puck era. We still had the red line. There wasn't a lot of goals to be had. So it's just incredible what he did. He got over 1,000 points. He was playing on so-so teams. But yeah, gosh, just an incredible talent. I'm glad he got in. I wonder if this opens up the gate for other players, like you mentioned. I want to see JR in the Hall of Fame. I want to see Bob Probert in the Hall of Fame. I want to see different types of characters who do different things other than score points get into the Hall of Fame and be recognized for their contribution to the game. A guy like Tiger Williams. Why not? He was a hell of a player. did a great job in the NHL, did his job to the max that he could do it. So I don't know. Alexander Mogilny, good for you. You definitely deserve it. Good news for Buffalo. And they needed it because I'm going to transition a little bit, Tim, because my poor Buffalo Sabres, you know, you wake up in the morning, and you feel good. I had a good night's sleep. I went to bed, you know, in good spirits. And then I wake up and I check my news feed and I have to, you know, rub the sleep out of my eyes. And then I check it again and I go, again, they did it again. Holy doodle in a negative sense. The Buffalo Sabres have traded JJ Paterka to the Utah Mammoth for Michael Kesselring and Josh Dahl. I will say that again for those of you who don't have good ears. They have traded JJ Paterka, a 23-year-old budding superstar who is coming off a 68-point season, under team control for another 3 years. They have traded him to the Utah Mammoth for Josh Doan, also 23, who's got 19 points last year, so far less, 50 points less, and for Michael Kesselring, a big body defenseman who can move the puck pretty good, but needs some work on his game. But a good player, don't get me wrong, a very good player, a very good piece for their back end. But you're trading, Tim, you're trading a first-line player. You are trading a guy that you can lock up for long-term, 8 years, $7, $8 million, and you can just go, okay, we're good. Our winger situation is good. I know this guy is going to put up at least 30 goals and 70 points for the next 8 years, probably more. So, I don't know, Tim. Make it make sense to me, because I don't know what Kevin Adams is doing. I know Paterka wasn't happy with Buffalo, but you have him under control. Just play hardball. Say, no, you're not going anywhere. Because I'm a little upset at Buffalo right now. I don't want to be. I really don't want to be.
Well, okay, so we've heard his name for weeks now. We mentioned it earlier this week, and he was a guy that was just, it was a when, not if, he was being traded. He wasn't happy. He didn't want to be part of a struggling team, whatever his personal reasons were. He was out the door, and he had one foot out the door already. So we know that he was going to have to be moved. I know you're going to say, no, he didn't. He was under control. He wanted out.
Yeah.
And teams generally don't want players who don't want to be there. So I think with that in mind, the return is pretty good. I mean, Kesselring is a good, like, you know, steadying the play type of defenseman who moves pretty well for a guy his size. And Doan is obviously a pretty, you know, I wouldn't call him a blue chip necessarily, but he's a pretty highly touted young player that could be a point per game guy at some point in his career. So the upside is there, and you're getting pretty pieces that'll help you now, but you're trading away the best player. And generally the rule of thumb is if you lose, whoever gets the best player wins the deal. And that's the Utah Mammoth. Paterka, I didn't realize until I looked this morning, what a good season he had. 68 points. Like, I kind of thought he was one of those 50 point guys with some potential, but 68, like, you're hovering close to point per game at that point. And I think he's only going to get better, which is just that, add him to that running list of names of guys that go on to be superstars elsewhere, like Eichel, like Reinhardt, like so many others who have gone on to win cups and play really well and play on these winning teams. And I think he's obviously going to be the next one.
Well, it's just frustrating for a Buffalo Sabres fan, which I am, because you can tell, like, everything you want Josh Doan to be, Paterka is. So the ceiling for Josh Doan is JJ Paterka, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh man, best case scenario, he turns out to be like a point per game guy who gets 30 goals and we can slot him in at the first line position. Ding dong, that's Paterka. That's him. So with all this being said, okay, the trade happened. Great. Kevin Adams probably kicked the tires with all these GMs. He got the best deal that he thought he could make for the team. The bigger question is, why does he want to leave Buffalo? What is the reasoning for your 23-year-old star winger to want to leave your team? Like, that's what everybody should be asking Kevin Adams. Why did J.J. Paterka, after the season, come into your office and go, I don't want to be here anymore? What's the reasoning behind that? Because coming off your career season, coming off a season where you're a point per game, you're playing great minutes, you're on the power play, you're playing with Tage Thompson and Alex Tuck and good players. Why does he not want to be here? What's the culture like in Buffalo? And I was around the team. I went there for a few times this year, and I'm intimately close with some of the staff and things like that. And the word I'm getting is it's the environment's not great. It's too non-hockey like in my eyes. It's too much of everybody's on pins and needles. Nobody's secure in their job. You try to bring Lindy Ruff back in to kind of bring some normalcy to the organization, and it's not there. You hire people close to the Sabres organization. That's what they've typically done, whether it's the president, the GM. Everybody has a Buffalo Sabres connection in some way, and it's not working. Nobody is really good at their job. Kevin Adams, I love him. I consider him a good friend. He's not a good GM. Lindy Ruff, is too old to be a coach in the NHL. He should not be a coach of this team. All of the management, all of the staff, and I'll probably take heat for saying this, they need to go outside of the organization. They need to start mixing it up a little bit, because from what I've heard and from what I've seen, it's not a good environment to be around. And players want to be in an environment that is professionally ran, their sole focus is on winning, and everybody is upset when you don't win. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, for the Sabres, you need to possibly start looking elsewhere for people to run your team. And I don't know what that means, but if I'm Terry Pegula and I keep seeing talent just being shopped and shipped and out the door, it's got to be frustrating, considering he owns the Bills. He knows what a successful franchise is ran like, and it's just not happening with Buffalo. So they need to shake it up, because J.J. Paterka should not be asking to leave. And then on the other side of the page, you have the Utah Mammoth, who are just stockpiling young talent, Tim. And if I'm a free agent, an unrestricted free agent, and I look at this core, it's looking pretty solid now with the addition of Paterka, because you have Kyler, you have Cooley, you have Gunther, you've got Sergachev on the back end. All of a sudden, this team that's coming over from the Arizona Coyotes looking pretty strong to be a contender in the West for a long time with these young players.
BetterHelp Online Therapy bought this 30-second ad to remind you, right now, wherever you are, to unclench your jaw, relax your shoulders, take a deep breath in and out. Feels better, right? That's 15 seconds of self-care. Imagine what you could do with more. Visit betterhelp.com/randompod for 10% off your first month of therapy. No pressure, just help. But for now, just relax.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm really excited about what the Mammoth are building. And it's a team that I've kind of liked for a couple of years now, and even some of the names you skipped over, like Schmaltz is good, Lawson Krause is good, Matthias Michelli is good, like Barrett Hayton. These are some good names that I think they're building an identity that they didn't have a couple of years ago, and Paterka is going to accelerate that. I think we still need to see superstar Clayton Keller, and I do believe he's got another level that we haven't seen yet that he can access, and hopefully it comes as soon as this season. And the more talent you surround him with, the better, the more likely you're going to see it. So, yeah, I think this is very exciting. And for Buffalo, it's just one of those things where we spent a lot of time on this show talking about this team. And even Buchacross said it when we interviewed him last year. He was like, they need to bring in grown-ups. Like, they need to bring in experienced hockey people. They keep looking for these shortcuts and these little culture hacks and things like that and things for the building. It's like, let's build an actual hockey program. And there's not... Where there's smoke, there's fire. When so many players have wanted out and so many players have gotten better playing outside your organization, it's like there's two feeding grounds for NHL teams. One of them is the AHL. The other one's the Buffalo Sabres. Like, you can just go get your player for pennies on the dollar, and then he'll come over your team and score 30 goals and be a superstar. It's just, it's got to be frustrating. And it's the part that's annoying to me from the outside looking in is, hearing Kevin Adams saying stuff like he feels bad for the Sabres fans, that they deserve better. It's like, yeah, you're right, but you're the problem, man. Like, you're, as much as anyone is, it's you. So I don't know where you go from here.
It's like a guy who cheats on his girlfriend. I really feel bad for my girlfriend. It's like, bro, you're the reason why. Like, you're the reason why she's sad. Like, it's just, Kevin, you're the reason why the Sabres fans are frustrated right now, and you acknowledging it doesn't make it feel any better. Oh, I'm sorry you got that black eye. I just punched you. That must hurt. It's like, yeah, yeah, you're the reason, ding dong. So it's tough for the Sabres. It's like,
Ryan from The Office, when he talks about the person he used to be and refers to him as like, oh, yeah, that guy hurt a lot of people. He hurt me, too. Like, no, you need to get some accountability for your actions. Like, oh, no, I can't. That's a different person. It's like, okay, really?
Well, the question here, Tim, is now, does Mitch Marner add Utah to his list of short teams that he wants to go to? Because there's been rumors up and down about this guy. He's obviously the biggest name on the market, and July 1st is vastly approaching. If you're Mitch Marner and you see this team now and you can slot in with these young, exciting players, do you want to go play in Utah?
Well, there's this whole concept of like the move before the move. And so, for example, there was a trade the other day, a rumored trade that wasn't actually official, that Hurdle had been traded to Carolina. Yeah. And then ended up not being, he was the guy, the reporter said he was a little too early for that. And obviously it hasn't happened. But if that had happened, you think, okay, Vegas isn't just doing this to get rid of a player. They're making this move to make another move, whether that's Marner or somebody else, Jason Robertson, whatever. Same thing with we're talking about the Evander Kane trade in a second. It's like, what are they going to do with that cap space? It's the move before the move. This could be something for the Utah team where like all of a sudden you bring in one player to bring in another, to entice another player to accelerate your window of competing for a playoff spot. And yeah, I think this is kind of teed up for that, the way the free agency class is going and the type of player Peterka is. And it makes a lot of sense for Marner. He obviously wants to go smaller market. He wants to leave Canada, but also he probably wants to compete for a playoff spot. And this is a chance for him to have a solid chance of doing that.
Yeah, I agree. If I'm Mitch Marner, I talk about the LA Kings being a good destination for him. The Utah Mammoth, I would definitely go there. You immediately become the face of the franchise. Like you could run that whole franchise. That's the kind of power you would have going there. Whereas if you go to the LA Kings, you're still playing second fiddle to Drew Doughty, Anze Kopitar. So if he wants that, you know, responsibility, if he wants to be the face of a franchise, Utah is that team. And I think it's a great spot for him. But speaking of Evander Kane, he got traded by the Edmonton Oilers. A great, great trade, in my opinion, by Stan Bowman. And I'm not a huge Stan Bowman fan because he traded me out of Chicago, screwed me out of a Stanley Cup ring, which I earned and deserved. And I'm still, you know, a little bitter about it. And him and Brandon Bolig can go to hell, in my opinion. But he gets traded to the Vancouver Canucks. And as it happens, the player breaks the news. It wasn't the team. It wasn't Frank Saravalli. It wasn't anybody else. Evander Kane took it upon himself. And he broke the news and he took to Twitter and he had the longest thank you letter I think I've ever read to the Edmonton Oilers staff and their fans and their players. And it just makes you think at first glance, did he have this queued up? Did he know this was going to happen? Because that wasn't a letter that you can just whip up. So let's just start with there. Why? What did you think of the tweet that Evander sent out, Tim?
Yeah, this is the kind of a weird one because Bob Stauffer, I don't know how I'm saying it right, but he said that they were going to have a lot of cap space freed up soon. And I think people were thinking it was going to be Nurse and maybe it still will be, but I think this is something that we knew was coming. And it's a weird time and thing because I happened to be online on Twitter when this broke. And I think it was Frank or Elliot or one of those guys said, I believe there's a trade about to, you know, come through. It's pretty close. And like seconds later, this long letter from Evander went out. So he was the one that officially broke the news before any of the insiders, before the team did it. It's unusual. You don't really see that very often. And there's, you know, some nice sentiments in there, thanking the city and the fans or whatever. But I think the bigger news is what the heck are the Vancouver Canucks doing with this trade? What are you doing trading for this guy? And then how are you, the trade itself, where you gave up a fourth round pick, which is like not a high price to pay, obviously, for a guy that's a pretty good player. But it doesn't make any sense for them. And you're really helping out a divisional rival get a pretty good contract off their books for nothing. Like, you don't think that you would have thought to get rid of Evander, you would have had to give up another asset just to get another team to take him, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would think so. But I also thought Erik Karlsson, nobody would take that contract. So a sucker's born every day. And Jim Rutherford is apparently a huge sucker because he gave up a fourth rounder to get Evander Kane and retained all of his salary. And let's just start by talking about the Vancouver Canucks. 3, 4, 5 years ago, this team was looking pretty promising. You know, you have Bo Horvat, you have a young Quinn Hughes, you have a young Brock Besser, you have JT Miller, you have a superstar Elias Pettersson in the making. You have a really solid team. Thatcher Demko, a good young goaltender. Like, the makings of a very good dynasty. You just blow it up. Obviously, they've had on-ice struggles. They couldn't put it all together, but the core was really, really strong. I think you let Bo Horvat go a little too early. He was, I think, the backbone of this team. He was the driving force that kept that locker room in check, because ever since he left, it's just been chaos in that locker room. JT Miller walks, and you replace them with Jake DeBrusk, who was a castaway from Boston, who never really found his footing. He had moments of greatness, but overall, lackluster tenure with the Bruins. You bring in Evander Kane, who, in my opinion, and I think the opinion of most people in hockey, is the biggest cancer to ever lace him up and step foot on the ice. Every locker room he's been in, he's managed to piss everybody off. Every fan base that he's been with, he's managed to annoy them, frustrate them, and just alienate a large swath of the fans based on his social media posts, how he acts on the ice, how he acts after the game, just his whole deal. He's getting billboards to women he wants to hook up with. His ex-wife is just going after him in the press. He's filing for bankruptcy. He's tweeting pictures of himself with stacks of cash on his ear. He's tweeting pictures in Vegas with cash on the bed. He's doing all these dramatic things for publicity. The guy is the definition of a distraction in the worst possible sense. He is everything I don't want my daughters to date. If they come to the door with Evander Kane, I am going to just kill Evander Kane and then turn to my daughters and go, what have I done with my life? Why did I raise someone like you? Because you're obviously terrible at making decisions. So two things. Great trade by Edmonton. Let's go back to that. They free up $5.5 million, which they desperately need. They still need to free up a little bit more money. And Evander Kane, I think after my whole diatribe about him being a bad person and a horrible this and that, he's a good hockey player when he wants to be, Tim. I think when he's focused, he's one of the best power forwards there is. But the issue with him, and I think we saw it in the playoffs, is he gets distracted. I think he starts drinking his own Kool-Aid and he tries to be a player that he's not. He takes penalties. He's undisciplined. He gets just distracted from what he needs to do to be a good power forward, which is dump the puck in, finish a check, get it to a skilled player, go to the net, score a greasy goal. It's a very simple recipe to be a good power forward, and he could definitely do it, but he just can't focus that long to be that player. He wants to be the superstar. He wants to be the goon. He wants to be the mouth on the bench. He wants to be all these things that take him away from being the player that he could be, because he has the tools to be that player, Tim. And it's just like, he just will never get out of his own way. And he cost, some would say, the Oilers the cup by taking all these penalties, letting Florida get on the power play, getting the star players tired for killing penalties, getting, you know, ruining momentum. He was a momentum suck in the Stanley Cup finals. I don't know. Am I over-exaggerating it, Tim?
Well, I think even if you're defending Kane and you want to be generous with how you describe him, I don't think anyone can argue that he's not a distraction. I think at a minimum, he's a distraction. And this is not what the Canucks need. All the stuff we've heard in the last couple of years about the issues in the locker room, the culture problems, the organizational problems, and you have players not getting along with each other. You have guys like Elias Pettersson, who has been quite dramatic. You have JT Miller wanting to get out of town. Like, you have all this stuff going on that you need to fix. And what they need, if they're going to bring in guys, they need guys that are going to build culture. They need guys that are going to make it better, that are going to add to it. And I don't think there's many worse players you could bring in the league into a room like that than Evander Kane. In fact, there's a quote that I saw from Dhaliwal, who's one of the guys that covers the Canucks very closely. He said he received this text from another team, quote, "There's only one team in the NHL that would welcome Evander Kane into their dressing room, and that's the Vancouver Canucks. So what does that tell you? So the whole thing is strange. And the fact that they gave up a pick to get him, the Oilers didn't give them any assets beside Evander Kane. The Oilers didn't eat any of his cap. It's very, very strange. And going back to your point at the beginning, like what this Canucks team could have been, what we thought they were going to be, the next great team in the West. And now they're missing the playoffs and they're losing some of their best players and they're bringing in problem players. It's just, I'm glad I don't live there. I'm glad I'm not a fan of that team because I would be pulling my hair out.
When you were discussing like Evander Kane going into this locker room, it reminds me of the WWF when you think everything's cool, then all of a sudden a guy comes in from the stage and you hear like Stone Cold, psh, and here comes Stone Cold, you know, walking. This is Evander Kane coming into this locker room. You think you figured it out. You think you're on the road to recovery. You got rid of JT Miller. You ruined that. Got rid of that conflict between him and Elias Pettersson, starting to repair the relationship with Quinn Hughes that Jim Rutherford continues to exacerbate with his comments in the press, trying to rebuild this franchise. And all of a sudden, psh, dun, 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 here comes Evander Kane. He's going to ruin everything. Every locker room he's been in, he's been a problem. Whether it was Atlanta/Winnipeg, going to Buffalo, burning bridges there, going to San Jose, burning bridges there, going to Edmonton, burning bridges there. The guy is hated everywhere he goes. And now he's going home. He's a Vancouver boy. You don't think he's going to have distractions there? You don't think he's going to want to show off to his buddies and all the people that he grew up with? So I don't know. I don't know why they do this. He's 33 years old. He's not getting any better. It just doesn't make sense to me. He's got a long list of injury history to go along with his just personal issues. So woof, bad move by Jim Rutherford to take on this contract and this player. And then for the Edmonton Oilers, great move. I think you free up money, obviously, to re-sign Evan Bouchard. You still need to get out from Victor Arvidsson's contract because you're going to have to pay Connor McDavid, hopefully, a big boatload of money next year. And you still want to bring in players. And Evander Kane was not good. So you're trying to use that money to make Connor happy. I think that's the sole focus of this offseason, if I'm Stan Bowman, is to make Connor happy. Every move I make, dun, 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 dun. Every breath I take, it's to make Connor happy. So before this trade, I call Connor, like, hey, I'm getting rid of Vander. What do you think? You're good? Okay, good. Trade it. Oh, it's a draft. Who do you like? Oh, you like him? Good. We're going to pick him. Oh, it's free agency. I want to sign this guy. Do you like him? Good. We're going to sign. And I'm serious. He should absolutely do that.
That's a really good point. In a summer where it's very, very important to do everything to make Connor McDavid happy, they trade Evander Kane. I think that can't be overstated.
Yeah. They know they're going to have to pay Bouchard. They know they're going to have to pay Connor, hopefully, but you have to make him happy. It's funny. I was on Twitter too when the news dropped and I wrote up a couple tweets and I'm going to be more active on there. So get ready. I deleted a couple just because it's like, gosh, I got to be careful because stuff goes wild. Because I was going to go like scorched earth on Evander and Vancouver. But who knows? Maybe the Vancouver Canucks want me to be their broadcaster one of these. I've already burned my bridge with Buffalo in this episode. I've already burned it with Chicago potentially. So I'm just, there's only so many teams in the league, Tim, that I got to be careful with. But anyways, great job at the Edmonton Oilers. I think so. This will be very well for next year for the Connor McDavid re-signing, just year-long thing. They're going to try to get him to re-sign in Vancouver. What the hell? Like, what are we doing? It's so stupid.
Hey, the Sharks still love you.
The Sharks still love me. I can go there. All right. What else are we talking about, Tim?
Yeah, I'll just rattle through a few other rumors and signings and that sort of thing. So Cam Atkinson is moving on from Tampa Bay. He'll be looking to join a new club this summer as a UFA. So he's a decent veteran, middle six pickup at this point.
Is he now?
Sure. Yeah.
I could not even have told you he was on Tampa Bay. That's how far removed I am from Cam Atkinson being just a valuable player in the NHL right now. Because he had his moments with Columbus, then he went to Philadelphia, and that was a fun trade. Tim, I don't know. He's one of those guys who's like, oh, look at my resume. And then he gets there. It's like, buddy, you suck now. I got okay. Yeah. He's chasing a cup. That's what he's doing. Sure. Good for him. But not everybody's Corey Perry. That's
true. Or Brad Marchand. You're going to love this one. Matt Martin, officially retired. Obviously, pretty solid career for a guy with his skill set. He's joining the front office of the Islanders as a special assistant to the GM. I wish we had kept a running list all these years.
Oh my gosh.
Of all these names and all these titles. It's pretty amazing.
It's so incredibly stupid. But yeah, he'll cash the paycheck for like 160 grand. Just show up. And that's what that means is he'll just go to every home game and just schmooze the people in the skyboxes. That's what it means. He's that guy. He was so close to getting 1,000 games. I think he was 13 games short or something very close to that. But gosh, like you mentioned, good career for him. He found his niche in the Islanders. He did it well, part of that great fourth line with him, Clutterbuck, and Cizikas. They were very effective. And they found an organization who valued that, and they milked every last ounce that they could have out of their talents and their persona. Then he goes to Toronto, signs a big ticket. Now he's back in the Islanders. Good for him. You can't. There's only three guys now, Tim, who don't wear a visor. I guess maybe two if you consider, what's his face? Friend of the show, tough guy. What's his nuts?
Brutus?
No. Black guy. Tough guy. He's been on the show like three times. Why am I blanking? In Toronto. What's his name?
Oh, Reeves.
Yeah, Revo. If you consider him an NHLer now, he's gone, but there's only two now left. It's Ryan O'Reilly and it's not somebody else. But anyways, there's not many guys without visors kicking around. So good for Matt Martin. Very good. He got a job. Matthew Darche. Good hire. All right. Speaking of Toronto, Pierre LeBrun on contract talks with John Tavares. And this is going out on a limb. Wow. Way to go out on a limb, Pierre LeBrun. He says, I believe that if the Leafs put a $20 million four-year offer in front of John Tavares, he would sign it. Yeah, no shit. Like, that's a lot of money, $20 million over 4 years. Way to go out on a limb, Pierre. If I offered him $5 million a year for 4 years, he's going to take it. Of course he's taking it. Like, of course. Like, I think the Leafs should be around $3.5 million for John Tavares. $4 million, that's a good team-friendly deal. $5 million, the guy's a million years old. Million years old, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, but he still had a good season last year. He's still a productive player. I mean, he could get more in the open market, don't you think? So no. I don't think it's that safe, but I get your point. The next one's the opposite.
Tim, I'm going to go out on a limb here and tweet something. I'm going to say if the Chicago Blackhawks offer, who do they have that's crappy? Who's a crappy player in the Blackhawks? Somebody. John Scott, 8 years at $6 million. He'll take it. He'll take it. Well, no crap here. Like, come on. And Pierre's great, but that's outrageous. Of course he's going to take it. Five AAV. Yeah, he's like, is this Tavares 38? 37?
Yes, about that. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe 1 year at $5 million. He could maybe get more, but the guy's like, listen, he's on the wrong side of 35 for Pete's sake. He's almost 40. So, yeah, I don't know. That stuff I just laugh at. I'm like, yeah, of course. I honestly laughed out loud when I saw that. Like, yes, I know. $5 million. Yeah, of course. Like, Pierre, dummy. All right. And this one boiled my blood a little bit. What is Frank Saravalli tweeting, Tim?
He said that Gavrikov, the defenseman from LA, is the contract for him is probably going to come in at 7 years at close to $8 million per.
Thoughts? Spit take. I almost spit my coffee on the screen. It's just insane. And okay, I get the LA Kings are in a flux with their defense. They're in a transition period. Drew Doughty is leaving. Who are the next guys? And this is what helps Gavrikov's contract talks with the LA Kings, because when Drew Doughty was out this year, he stepped up and he played alongside Mikey Anderson in their first pairing. And he did good. He did very, very good. So I'm not saying he's not a good defenseman. But $8 million, that is for puck moving. Power play one skilled defenseman. That is for elite defenseman getting that $8 million mark. I know the cap's going up, not for Gavrikov and shit. And when you look at the comparables, I did a little bit of research here because it bothered me so much. Jakub Slavin or Jacob Slavin, however you want to say it. He gets 8 years at 6.46. I'm taking Jacob Slavin all day, every day.
Yeah.
In front of Vladislav Gavrikov. Brett Pesce just signed this deal. 6 years at 5.5. I'm taking Brett Pesce over Gavrikov. Sanheim from the Philadelphia Flyers, 8 years, 6.25. I'm taking Sanheim over Gavrikov, and there's more, but these guys are similar age, similar point total. Pesci and Slavin get more points, and Sanheim's pretty similar. The fact that the Kings are even entertaining 8 years makes me think that they're just kind of, are they just a little nervous about their defensive core, and Gavrikov's taking advantage of that fact that they know that they're a little short on the back end? But $8 million, Tim, $8 million for this guy? That's incredible. Absolutely incredible that he's even asking for that.
And they're, I mean, you always have to wonder what the source of this is, right? This is Gavrikov's camp saying, just putting, you know, the negotiations mm-hmm. out and putting pressure. And I think, like you said, he's coming at this from an advantage because of their cap situation and their team makeup and everything. But it makes me think, and again, he's a very, very good defenseman, which you already said. But do you think this could end up being like a Mark Edward Vlasic contract, where it's a defensive defenseman that is very good at the peak of his game, but it's not going to age super well? And all of a sudden you're looking at buyout for like 3 years in a row, deciding whether or not to do it because you're not getting what you need. And like you said, the guys that you're paying that money to, you're going to need specific skill sets that Gavrikov doesn't have. So I'm surprised that number's this high.
Yeah, I don't think it is as bad as Mark-Edward Vlasic, because he signed his 8-year deal, I think, when he was 32, 34. So whereas Gavrikov's only 29, but still it takes him to 37 year. And these types of defensemen, they don't age well. Like once they hit that, you know, 34, 35, the body just shuts down. And we've seen Pickles. He's nowhere near the defenseman he was. And he just struggles to get around the ice. He's a great guy to be around, but boy, he makes, what is Pickles make? $8 million? Something silly like that?
He was, yeah, it's crazy.
Like, it's stupid. He still has 1 year left on his deal, and I think he just came out and said, I'm going to play it out. He's 38, he makes $7 million. He's played so many games internationally in playoff, he looks like he's 52. Like, he's just the guy. Love the guy. Boy, oh boy. He's just so proud of his game, too. But yeah, bad, bad, bad contract by the LA Kings if they sign him to anything close to $8 million. He should be at 6.5. That'd be a good deal for team and player. All right, last thing. Sounds like the defenseman Ryan Lindgren will be heading to the unrestricted free agency market. And he went to Colorado, didn't really work out. So they're trying to just ditch money, much like every other high-end team trying to, you know, figure out how to improve their team. So good for him. Lindgren sucks now. So I don't even, you know, I don't know if that really makes any difference. But anything else, Tim, that you want to get off your chest?
Just on the Lindgren thing, I think it's Colorado's going to have a big summer. They're still trying to figure out the Nietzsche's thing. And then obviously Charlie Coyle is not someone that they necessarily want to be tied to. They got Sam Girard in the back end. So, yeah, some moves to be made there.
All right, cool. Well, one last thing for our show, kind of a big piece of news that not fun to talk about, but Tim is leaving. He informed me about a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, 3.5 weeks, that he has decided to go his own ways and do different things. And he will not be carrying on with dropping the gloves come July 1st. So we'll obviously do the draft and do the free agency period. And that will be Tim's last show. So not great news for me, obviously not great news for all our listeners and our friends on Slack, but you have to respect obviously Tim. He's done a lot for me and the show and everybody listening. So that's kind of the bombshell that was dropped, and we're sharing it now. So Tim, I don't know, you want to say a few words?
Yeah, thank you. This was a difficult decision that I wrestled a lot with, but I think it's just time for me to move on. And I'm not doing anything else with hockey. I'm not doing another show or anything like that. Just kind of taking a break and stepping back. I will share some more thoughts. On Monday will be our last show, and kind of give some thank yous and some, you know, parting words there. But thank you so much for the support, and you know, you can still find me online and all that. And thank you to John, and I'll be sharing some more stuff when the time comes. But it's bittersweet. A good thing is coming to an end, and it's never easy when that's the case. So thank you for your support, and we'll keep listening.
Yeah, I blame Julia. Obviously.
Actually, funny story. Let me say, so my aunt Megan, who you know, she's the principal at that school near you up in Traverse City. She texted me the other night. She was like, hey, I was at an event where like three or four of John's girls were there, some after school thing or something. And I was chatting them up, and they said, you're leaving the show? And I said, yeah, apparently words out with the Scott family. And they said, and she was like, yeah, I had no idea. They were talking about it, told me about it. And they said also that you're getting married. And I was like, you'll know when I know. That's not the reason. I think that's what a lot of people are thinking. And what's going on in our personal lives has nothing to do with this. This is a me decision for sure.
Well, like we said with Evander Kane, usually where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't believe that. So we will just move on from that. But yeah, it's a sad day for the Drop in the Gloves family, but the show will continue. I'll plowing on, continue to, you know, do content, and I enjoy doing it. So we will figure out a path forward. But yeah, we got one more episode with Tim. We'll have some fun with it, and we'll see everybody next week. Cheers, everybody.